Senators are working very hard, but I've still got one more ace in the hole. So I plan on getting that road finished.
The U.S. House approves a road to King Cove. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, July 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the origins of the permanent fund dividend.
When you collect that check, it is your share as an owner of the resource.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. A Veterans Town Hall featuring Dr. Timothy Ballard will take place on July 25th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Bernard Memorial Sports Center in Wasilla. The event is open to all. The VA welcomes frank and open discussions of veterans' concerns in all program areas. Time will be made available for individuals to address their concerns in one-on-one sessions. For more information, email samuel.hudson@va.gov. This message sponsored by the VA.
The U.S. House today passed a bill that would allow a road between King Cove and Cold Bay. If it becomes law, it could accomplish a decades-long goal for Alaska's congressional delegation, providing King Cove, a town with tough access near the Aleutian Chain, a land route to a former Air Force runway where planes land in all weather. The vote was 248 to 179. Congressman Don Young predicts construction of the 11-mile road could start soon.
I would suggest it will be done before the year's over, as far as the beginning.
The Senate hasn't passed the bill yet. Young hinted the Trump administration might not need new legislation to take action.
So we hope to pass it to the Senate. The two senators are working very hard, but I've still got one more ace in the hole. So I plan on getting that road finished.
The bill authorizes a land trade between the state of Alaska and the federal government for a one-lane gravel road in the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge. Part of the road would go through a designated wilderness, the federal classification of highest protection. Conservation groups especially dislike that the bill waives the requirements of the National Environmental Policy Act. They say the road would damage habitat important for migratory waterfowl in a world-class refuge. Arizona Democratic Congressman Raul Grijalva argued against the bill on the House floor.
It's a road through a narrow chain of islands and lagoons. Its construction requires the development of bridges, installation of culverts and pipes, and the dredge and fill of nearly 4 acres of wetlands.
Young says it's a life-saving road that would allow people in King Cove a way to fly out in an emergency. Senator Lisa Murkowski sponsored a Senate version of the bill, which is still pending. The issue predates her time in Congress. Back in 1997, her father, Senator Frank Murkowski, authored a King Cove road bill, as did Young. President Trump has chosen a former commissioner of the Alaska Department of Natural Resources for a top position at the Interior Department. Joe Balash has been selected to be the Assistant Secretary for Lands and Mineral Management. Balash is from North Pole. He's working now as Chief of Staff to U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan. He was DNR Commissioner for Governor Sean Parnell. In his new post, Balash will lead Interior Department's management of federal land and waters. He will oversee the Bureau of Land Management, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement. The position requires Senate confirmation. Alaska's credit was downgraded by two rating agencies in the past week. The state had the highest possible rating at the beginning of last year, but the legislature failed to pass a plan to balance future state budgets for two straight years, which has contributed to the downgrades. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports on what this means for the state.
Alaska's credit rating comes into play when the state issues bonds to pay for infrastructure. For example, Alaska's government can issue $100 million in bonds left from nearly half a billion voters approved in 2012. If the state issued those bonds before the rating downgrades that began in January 2016, it would cost $250,000 to $300,000 less per year than now. Over the 20-year life of a bond, that would add up to $5 million to $6 million. Those estimates are by Devin Mitchell. He's the state's debt manager in charge of trying to protect the credit rating.
It's akin to a credit score that you might see deteriorating due to credit issues that you might have experienced in your personal life and a correlated increase in cost for purchase of consumer goods on credit or a car or a home loan.
Moody's downgraded Alaska's credit rating from AA2 to AA3 last week, while Standard & Poor's downgraded it from AA+ to AA on Tuesday. Mitchell says the state doesn't plan on issuing any bonds this year, but if the credit rating remains lower when it does, the cost will add up.
If you could keep $5 million in your pocket rather than just giving it to somebody because of a perceived risk, you'd do so.
The credit rating doesn't just affect the state. There are other organizations that issue bonds whose ratings depend on the state's, such as the Alaska Energy Authority and the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority. Borough and city governments frequently rely on the bond bank. Mitchell says this could lead to higher taxes.
You can see directly, well, that money would have either not needed to have been collected or would have been available for another purpose if the interest expense on our $20 million project was less because the state had a better credit rating.
In the case of the city and borough of Juneau, the state's worsening credit outlook may cause the municipal government to issue bonds on its own in the future instead of using the bond bank. While Juneau's rating used to be lower than the state's, they're the same now. Juneau Finance Director Bob Bartholomew says the falling ratings are one of many reasons why it's important for the legislature to resolve its differences over a plan to balance the state's budget.
We may be headed towards having a higher credit rating than the bond bank. And in that case, it's still more expensive for us than what it was prior to the downgrades.
Mitchell says the $60 billion Alaska Permanent Fund traditionally didn't always help the state's credit rating. That was despite the fact the legislature could tap the fund to pay its bills if it needed to.
I've had rating analysts tell me historically that there's no way the state will ever spend money out of the permanent fund for governmental services.
But Governor Bill Walker's decision to veto permanent fund dividend money last year and the legislature providing less than the amount laid out by state law this year may help Alaska's credit ratings in the future. It was a signal that the fund could be used for more than just PFDs.
It got us closer to a point that I believe you were going to be able to start receiving full credit for the permanent fund in our credit analysis, because in my view, we're not receiving that credit at this point.
But all is not rosy in the ratings outlook. The state has 1 year left in the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund, a piggy bank that's covered annual deficits up until now.
It could be that we have another year next year where it's too difficult to reach agreement between the two different positions that exist within the legislature, and we wind up using the CBRF again one last time, and then everybody will know the next year something will have to change.
Or Alaska could face its third straight summer with lower credit ratings. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
A controversial new rule on sex, gender, and bathrooms looks likely to go before Anchorage voters next spring. The measure seeks to regulate bathrooms, locker rooms, and other so-called intimate spaces on the basis of biological sex rather than gender identity. The Alaska Family Action Council, which calls itself a public policy ministry, standing for conservative values, says supporters submitted close to 8,500 signatures to the municipal clerk's office this morning. The initiative needs just under 6,000 signatures from qualified Anchorage voters to appear on the citywide ballot in April. The measure has already sparked controversy and an opposition campaign among those who say it would discriminate against transgender residents. Proponents of the measure say it protects privacy and religious freedom to define who is allowed into areas like changing rooms. If it passes, the proposition would require municipal bathrooms designate use by a person's biological sex as defined on a birth certificate and delete current language in city code that lets a person use facilities consistent with their own gender identity. It also would recognize gender as being permanently defined by a person's assigned sex at birth and allow for employers like businesses and churches to use similar criteria in regulating their own bathrooms. The municipal clerk's office has 10 days to determine whether the petition has enough valid signatures to be certified. A coalition of groups opposed to the measure, called Fair Anchorage, says they'll focus on a public education campaign over the next several months. On Wednesday, State Senator David Wilson filed a letter of intent to run for lieutenant governor. Later the same day, he amended that filing, saying he is not running. Wilson, a Wasilla Republican, says he made the filing accidentally and does not intend to run for any statewide office in 2018. He declined to elaborate on how he accidentally filed to run for the state's second highest office and says he has no further comment on the issue. Meanwhile, the State Office of Special Prosecutions has not made a decision about whether to charge Wilson for allegedly slapping an Alaska Dispatch News reporter in the Capitol. The Juneau Police Department handed the case off to the office in May, 3 weeks after reporter Nathaniel Herz said Wilson slapped him in an encounter. Herz had an audio recorder going when he asked the senator about his reaction to a recent story.
What do you think? Was that reasonable?
Reasonable.
Fair.
Fair.
Chief Assistant Attorney General Andrew Peterson says he cannot provide further comment on an ongoing matter. Typical criminal cases go to local district attorneys for consideration. The state constitution makes legislators immune to arrests for misdemeanors while the legislature is in session. The legislature has been out of session since Sunday for the first time since the incident. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, searching for Oprah in Sitka.
Yeah, Michelle
just said she's not there.
Yeah. Maybe she's eating something.
Or like she's already in the
Maybe
jet.
She got a corn dog. Yeah.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Midnight Oil is brought to you with generous support from the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
There are plenty of other oil states in the world. Alaska is the only one that treats residents as shareholders of their oil wealth and cuts them a check each year. PFDs are paid out of the interest earned by our $60 billion oil savings account, the Permanent Fund. This summer, Alaska's Energy Desk is bringing you a series called Midnight Oil about the state's long and complicated relationship with the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Jennifer Pemberton tells us what it means to have that much money locked up in an untouchable savings account, especially when the state currently has a $2.5 billion hole in its budget.
The idea of saving our oil money did not come naturally at first. After finding the biggest oil field in the United States in the late 60s, the state auctioned off oil leases all along the North Slope. They thought they would get a couple million dollars from the auction, maybe 10. But those lease sales made $900 million, nine times the state's entire budget for that year. And Alaska's lawmakers had a choice: save it or spend it. What did they do?
Well, I don't have anything but a crude way to say. They went and pissed it up against the wall.
Clem Tillian was a state legislator at the time. He wanted to lock up the $900 million and throw away the key. But the state was only 10 years old at the time, with an economy based on fish. The legislature wanted to spend that money on infrastructure, and they did.
All sorts of fancy projects like grain storage and dreams and roads that pushed on into nowhere. We built auditoriums and built schools that were less interested in education than just fancy. In other words, we just took the $900 million and blew it.
Not everyone agrees that we blew that money. That was the cash that we used to make Alaska a real state with a real economy and real infrastructure. The bulk of it went to education. But it makes sense that Tillian thinks that money was wasted. He's 92 years old now and lives in Halibut Cove, a community he founded and a house he built himself. Talking to him, it's obvious that Clem Tillian feels strongly about preserving things for future generations. He even has this reminder of his own mortality.
I keep a coffin just outside my door, made in China, I think. And I have a place to put it. The grave is all dug. There's a hatch. I should go stencil on it, reserved Clem Tillian.
This is not just the philosophy of a man staring death in the face. This is more or less the philosophy that drove him to fight for Alaska's permanent fund. In 1976, the legislature passed a bill that would require the state to save 25% of all its oil money. And that November, the people of Alaska voted it into the Constitution. Tillian got his permanent fund. And the next year, when oil started flowing down the Trans-Alaska pipeline, money started flowing into the account. The fund was earning interest, but lawmakers just couldn't figure out what to do with that interest. And Governor Jay Hammond had an idea. Take the money, divvy it up, and give it to the people of Alaska. Here he is talking about it in a 1977 public TV program.
I want to make sure that everybody at the conclusion of all this activity can say, hey, I got a piece of the action.
He called his plan Alaska Inc., a corporation of sorts, with every Alaskan as a shareholder. Hammond wanted the oil money equally distributed across the state, to rural and to urban areas, to rich and to poor. He was worried that if the government was responsible for deciding where to spend that money, it would go to pet projects, to well-connected politicians, that it would stay in Juneau and Anchorage. It took a few years for the PFD to wind its way through the legislature. There was some debate, some political pushback, and even a lawsuit that went to the Supreme Court. But the story ends like this. In 1982, dividend checks for $1,000 were dropped in the mail to every Alaska resident.
When you collect that check, it is your share as an owner of the resource. With the permanent fund, we converted a non-renewable resource to a renewable, and you get a piece of that every year.
The account that the PFDs are drawn from, it's managed by the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. The headquarters are in Juneau, in a big, blocky, tan building.
I'm Angela.
Jennifer.
Nice to meet you. Do you want to come into my office?
And Angela Rodell, who has just introduced herself by her first name, is the CEO. She runs this place. And it's not like there's a giant vault here with all those billions squirreled away, but there are a ton of computer screens. Alaska's billions are in a diverse portfolio. We own whole city blocks in Manhattan, shopping centers in Spain, industrial parks in Minneapolis. We have stocks in 7-Eleven stores in Malaysia and Churchill Downs, the home of the Kentucky Derby. And the fund is doing really well.
We're having a very good year, and we are up $7 billion over where we started the fiscal year.
One thing that's mostly missing from the fund, though, is oil money. Last year, we only put away $300 million of actual oil money. The fund earns twice that much in interest every month. The permanent fund is supposed to be just that, permanent. But here's the thing. Oil prices and production are down, and it's becoming very clear that we just can't rely on oil money anymore to fund our government. Alaska has a $2.5 billion budget deficit, which is making that $60 billion savings account look awfully tempting. Constitutionally, we can't touch the principle of the fund, but the legislature can change what we do with the interest. And they have. For 2 years in a row now, the dividend has been capped, meaning Alaskans are getting half of their PFD check. The state is taking the rest and saving it, with the hopes of figuring out a way to use it to pay for government eventually. This is Clem Tillian's nightmare.
To take something from the permanent funds that belongs to the people, you're taking money away from some widow in a monarch.
He was in Juneau earlier this summer, fighting for the PFD like it's 1976. And he's currently suing Governor Walker for capping the PFD last year. If oil money isn't paying the bills, then we need to find another source of income, like taxes. This is a song that Tillian has been singing for a long time. When Alaska got rid of its income tax in 1980, he was the only one who voted to keep it. But if we don't figure out how to solve our budget woes any other way, we will have no choice but to start spending our savings, as Angela Rodell at the Permanent Fund Corporation is well aware.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you were in a tight spot where there was nothing left, I don't know how you would not spend that money if that was the only thing you had left to tap. So it absolutely could go away.
Back when Alaska's oil was discovered, Clem Tillion knew it wouldn't last forever. Everyone kind of knew it. But it took a special kind of foresight to start planning for the end of oil during the excitement of the bonanza. And how does he feel about his legacy?
If my children have a decent chance for life due to anything I've done, then I'm a success. To take care of my children, I'm forced to take care of yours. Look what happened to the French aristocracy in the 1700s. No, thank you. You always have to take care of the little guy.
Taking care of the little guy, in Alaska's case, likely won't involve guillotines. But unfortunately, it might mean tapping into the permanent fund. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Jennifer Pemberton.
This story is part of Alaska Energy Desk's podcast called Midnight Oil.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 40 years of operations in Alaska. And by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
The state has reversed its decision to allow Yukon River fishermen to commercially sell king salmon. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
Fish and Game authorized the first sale of Yukon King since 2011 during a commercial opening on Monday. The opening targeted fall chum salmon, but any kings caught could be sold as well. Subsistence users along the Yukon called the department out for being so restrictive in the beginning of the king season and then opening it to commercial sales. Forrest Bowers with Fish and Game says the public is right. Allowing fishermen to sell Yukon kings contradicts the state's original management plan, which was to limit the use of nets to allow kings to swim upriver to spawn.
When users do point out inconsistencies or express concern that perhaps we aren't interpreting a regulation the way the board intended or the way the public thought it was understood, well, then that gives us pause.
The restrictions were put in place by managers worried that kings would not meet escapement goals. Then the largest run of kings in more than a decade filled the river and eased those concerns. Bowers says the state's Board of Fisheries will need to rule on how to liberalize a fishery when a run does better than expected. With commercial sales of kings now closed, fishermen will return to releasing the species alive or keeping them for subsistence. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Wreckage from the fishing vessel Destination has been found off St. George Island. The boat and its six crew members were fishing for snow crab when they disappeared in February. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration announced this morning that two of its research vessels found and confirmed the location of the Destination earlier this month. U.S. Coast Guard will deploy the Cutter Healy, a dive team and remotely operated vehicle, to analyze the wreckage. The results of the search are part of the Coast Guard's ongoing investigation into the Destination. It's considered the worst accident in the Bering Sea crab fleet for more than a decade. Media mogul Oprah Winfrey set foot in Sitka Wednesday. She was on a Holland America cruise ship. On board were hundreds of loyal fans seeking adventure, inspiration, and if they were lucky, a chance to chat with the queen of daytime television. KCAW's Emily Kwong joined in the search.
Rumors that Oprah Winfrey was coming to Sitka have been floating around for weeks, and news reports from Juneau confirmed her arrival, as did her Instagram account.
Getting ready to hike the Mount Robert Trail here in Alaska.
This is a video of Oprah as she's about to go hiking. She declared 2017 her year of adventure and launched a series of cruises, one to Alaska, where she had never been before. On her itinerary for Sitka was a visit to the local bear sanctuary, Raptor Center, and watching Russian folk dance at Harrigan Centennial Hall. And that's where my stakeout began.
All right, so we are on full-blown Oprah watch.
As is everyone in town and on the cruise ship. Classy Hoyle is from Annapolis, Maryland.
She's certainly a role model. Hmm. You know, and I'm, probably 20 years older than she.
Hoyle's cruise was organized by O, the Oprah magazine, and takes inspiration straight from its pages. There are yoga classes, an onboard book club, motivational talks, and gifts every night.
What did she give?
Not a car.
The swag this time is more modest. A visor, a pen, and a journal, specifically for this trip. Oprah is big on reflection and on her faith. She was raised a Baptist, and after years of physical and sexual abuse, ran away from home when she was 13. Hoyle says Oprah told a cruise ship audience that she still gets on her knees every night to pray.
You know, which was shocking to me. I would think a billionaire, you know, you wouldn't think of that. She said every night.
I watch as bus after bus of her fans arrive, sporting gear with a giant O logo. Part of the appeal of Oprah is that she's built this massive empire around personal growth. People are inspired by her because she inspires them.
I feel like I felt Oprah for the first time in the last 25 years. You can read her, you can see her, but being in her presence, her essence, really flowed in the room. Everybody was captivated. You could hear a pin drop.
This is Coco Hunt. It isn't Oprah, but getting motivation from a true disciple of hers is the next best thing. I walk away beaming and find a gaggle of girls who have just received some disappointing news that Oprah left town.
They say she flew out. Did you just go to the airport right now?
Yeah, I'm just
there. Well, she's not there.
Yeah.
Maybe she's eating something.
Or like she's already in
the Maybe
jet.
She got a corn dog.
Yeah.
A local tour guide confirms that Oprah canceled all of her plans in Sitka and went straight to her private jet from the ship, overwhelmed by all the attention she'd been receiving aboard. Ultimately, Oprah came and went without a trace. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Andrew Kitchenman and Jennifer Pemberton in Juneau, Philip Manning in Talkeetna, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Barrett Wilbur in Unalaska, and Emily Kwong in Sitka. Our audio engineers, Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, Zachariah Hughes produced tonight's show, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Alaska Job Corps Center offers training to young people 16 to 24 years old interested in completing their education or starting a career and who meet income eligibility. On-the-job experience is provided in all the training programs from accounting services to security and protective services. Tweet hashtag careersbeginhere to learn more. This message is sponsored by Alaska Job Corps Center, Chugach Education Services, Inc.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.